So, folks, Lani Puriri is a sophrologist, and as always, Lani, we ask you to explain what a sophrologist is or what sophrology is, first up.
So what I do as a sophrologist is take a look at your whole body experience. So mind, body, spirit, breath, and consciousness. You are much bigger than what you see in the mirror. And we look at that and then identify how we can reshape that or restructure it. We rewire your brain so that you can have a calm and happy life experience rather than a stressed and anxious one.
Okay.
So basically, sophrology is happiness training because we go in and we work with your mind-body connection. And what that does is it affects your nervous system so that then your body can produce the happy hormones like serotonin and dopamine and oxytocin. And when your brain feels happy, then your body feels happy.
If we're not producing those happy hormones, are we in a neutral state or is our body producing other hormones that are unhappy? Hormones.
Yeah, definitely. Your body's continually producing hormones, right? But yes, the happy hormones of serotonin and dopamine, there is a process and there's a way to balance those things out. But yeah, generally your body will be producing other hormone, you know, the stress hormone of cortisol takes over because we generally exist in a state of chronic cortisol production rather than just productive cortisol production.
But people in our culture and society these days, at least, like that.
Yeah.
Is that like dopamine and serotonin associated with, like, they make us feel happy when they're running through our system?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is there a specific hormone? This is what, and I know it's not what you plan to talk about, but I'm just now wondering if there's a specific, when you feel sad and unhappy, is there a drug in your system doing that as well?
It would just be low levels of serotonin.
Oh, okay.
Or none at all. Yeah. So low levels of serotonin, low levels of dopamine. Dopamine is actually a pleasure hormone because of, perhaps you've achieved something great or you're just doing or your body is doing your actions and the activities of what you're doing is satisfying to you. Like, for example, when you were ticking those boxes, it was satisfying and you were actually boosting your dopamine levels in your body. And that was very satisfying.
I know, it's getting to the point where I was inventing things to put on the list so I could tick them off.
You're becoming addicted to tasks.
Yes, the behavior of an addict, yeah. So it didn't get out of hand, luckily.
Right. Yeah. So these hormones, the production of hormones, they produce, the body naturally produces them. But there are times where we need to artificially produce them, or there are times where we do that through addiction. And then it really gets out of control.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, I know today you wanted to talk about sleep.
Yes.
So what about sleep do you want to tell us?
Well, sleep actually is people think that sleep is just a thing we do at night, but it's actually a 24/7 process. So the way that you live your life that will determine how well you sleep at night. So, meaning your thoughts, your food, the things that you eat, the exercise, you know, thoughts, nutrition, exercise, your relationships, all of these things will have an effect on your sleep. And how much, speaking of hormones, how much daylight you get during the day and how you are with light in the evening, that has an effect on the melatonin, which is the hormone that you need for sleep.
Oh, okay. So, I mean, I've heard about the light in the evening thing, but just daylight, I mean, we're getting lots of light at the moment during the day. Mm-hmm. Does that mean if you spend all day in an office with no windows, that's not so good for your sleep?
It's definitely not. Yeah. So actually your production of melatonin starts first thing in the morning when you expose yourself to sun. So, and the sun should be at a specific level, like you should go outside at sunrise and look in the direction of the sun and for like 10 minutes, just expose your eyes and your body to the rising of the sun and the sunlight.
I live on the wrong side of town.
You can go down to the wharf or...
But I can't, like, I'm thinking like I walk to work or bike to work, but I'm biking with my back to the sun.
Mm.
Although I'm still getting like morning light. I mean, surely that must be good.
You are still, yeah, definitely. Yeah. But yeah, so the start of it, basically the triggering of the production of melatonin starts early in the morning and then throughout your day, as you are exposing yourself to light or sunlight, your brain and your body is being affected by that. You're generating the production of melatonin throughout the day. And then in the evening, as the sun starts to set, you have reached a peak level of melatonin, and then you start to lower, you know, dim the lights and lower things down a bit in the evening hours. Like right now we're at sunset is like, you know, in the 8 o'clock and 7 o'clock hour now, I guess it is. But yeah, by the time it's dark, it's actually time to go to sleep, and you just go to sleep when it's dark instead of staying up.
So a question, a fairly obvious one I have is that if it's melatonin's building up during the day, are you not getting sleepier as it builds up?
You do when the sun starts to set and when it gets darker in the evening.
So does it kind of sit waiting to do its job?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So I kind of explain it in a very layman term, and neuroscientists and people who are sciencey will not be happy with this explanation. But basically, you know, for people like us who aren't really scientists, to understand it easier, it's like taking an empty mug in the morning, and it's you fill it and you slowly fill it throughout the day, and then in the evening it's like overflowing, and then you sleep and it slowly dissipates, like you're sipping on your beverage throughout the day. And then it lowers throughout the night, and then it lowers until it's empty. And then you wake up in the morning, and then you refill your cup the next day with melatonin or with sunlight or light in order to continually have that cycle of melatonin building and then resting throughout the night. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So I have all sorts of probably pointless technical questions. What happens if you spend, like, well, the people who live in past the Arctic Circle who are in darkness mm-hmm. all day, or not so much now because we have electricity, but what life must have been like then?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's actually very, very difficult, very challenging for many reasons to not have sunlight. We don't really realize what's happening with the body in regards to sunlight and how important it is. But it is. And so for those people who live in places where it's dark or cloudy a lot, you have to find artificial ways to produce what sunlight would normally produce in the body.
So this could explain all sorts of things about England.
About what?
England and British people.
Oh, yep, for sure.
people
who are very northern, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Or southern, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, there's definitely a lot going on in regards to melatonin and sunlight and the importance of it and how it affects us. The other part of the whole light thing is in regards to our devices and how much are we using them in the evening, like past 7 or 8 o'clock at night. And how damaging that is, and also having really bright lights on in the house. Like you should be dimming your lights in the home around 8 o'clock-ish because your body is meant to sleep in the 9 o'clock. Ideally 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock is okay. Past 10 o'clock is too late for you to be going to bed.
Oh dear.
So, devices. I mean, it's all over social media in regards to what devices do to your eyes and your brain and your body when you have them on, you know, that glare coming on in the late hours of the evening when you're supposed to be sleeping.
I thought about a counter to that. Well, it's not necessarily a counter, but something that's in play is that, like, people are now kind of acknowledge that sometimes to calm down, they'll get the phone out or the device out and just scroll through watch a few videos and things, and it produces a bit of, you get that dopamine hit. So I think some people might be turning to that to relax before they go to sleep.
Yeah, that does happen. It's actually not, you know, we've tricked ourselves into saying that. So that would be a thought that we've decided to talk ourselves into, that that's actually a good thing. It's not necessarily it's not a good thing for your body. You might think it is because you're creating that scenario for your mind and for your body, and you're telling yourself this helps me rest. Just like when you tell yourself that caffeine gives you a boost, it does for a minute, but then an hour later you need another coffee.
So what's a better way of doing this? Like sometimes if I'm out in the evening and I come home and I try to go to bed at the normal time, I'm just not ready to sleep. So instead of doing some dopamine via social media stimulation, what's a better way?
Breathing and meditation. And dimming your lights, doing some breathing strategies, doing some mental clarity. You can also, one really great thing is to pull out a notebook and empty your thoughts onto some paper.
Oh, okay.
This is a really important strategy for healthy sleeping, is to just release all of the thoughts that are in your mind and write them down. Because a lot of times we're like, oh, I have to remember to do this thing tomorrow. Or, this thing happened today. It's just about releasing from those thoughts that are in your mind. And if you write them down using a pen and a piece of paper, your eyes are actually, you're holding a book. So it's very tactile.
Yeah.
Your eyes are seeing you write. So now your brain is actually engaging with the writing on the paper. It's very rhythmic. So your hand is doing something. There's movement happening. You're very focused on that. If you can calm yourself while you're doing that, so you're also intentionally breathing as you're writing, all of these strategies will help to release all of those thoughts and those actions and everything you've been doing for the last hour. If you've come home from some big activity, it'll really help you calm down if you just write the activities of the day or the thing you just did an hour ago, or, you know, some of the thoughts that are going on in your mind, or you make a checklist for the next day, whatever that is. But writing in the evening is very useful.
It's an interesting thought. I have another what if, which is for people who are addicted to their device, depriving yourself of the device the hour before you go to bed might just produce such high levels of anxiety that it's counterproductive, and you probably have to plan for that like a lot earlier out.
Yeah, so that's going to take a slow process of very intentional activity. Like if you recognize the danger of using your devices late in the evening, and you also recognize that you do have that device addiction, when you do come into a realization of that and you are very aware of what it's doing and how it's damaging your body and your lifestyle, then you can make an intentional decision of, I don't want to be doing this. This is not an activity I want to be engaging in for the rest of my life. I recognize this addiction. I want to change it. Mm-hmm. And when you want to change something, then you will, you know, your why has to be the thing that's driving you. And producing levels of cortisol in a productive, useful way instead of a damaging way of, I must do this thing because I'm addicted to it and I can't live without it. That's very damaging to your lifestyle.
It's interesting that I was just, this is another question that's occurred to me, but which is not really in your field at all, but how addictive are the devices for some people? Are they as addictive as the famous drugs that we know of, or I mean, there's people who are workaholics as well, and there's all sorts of things people get addicted to, but I'm wondering, like, I don't really know the answer to that question. I'm not very addicted to devices like that, where I just have to have it.
Yeah, it absolutely is. You can, there's a lot of research that's done in regards to how addictive our device is, and how damaging that is, some of the videos and things that we're watching, and the effect that it has on our brains. And yes, they are just as addictive as substances, drugs, caffeine, sugar, any addiction. You can create an addiction to anything, which then is damaging to your lifestyle. What's really frightening is children who are addicted to devices and how damaging that is for their brains and their bodies. And these are children who've had devices put in front of them since they were babies.
Yeah. And we all know, like, you weren't a parent in Raglan, but that drive into Hamilton, you will understand anyway. You don't have to live in Raglan for this, but trying to drive somewhere with a small child who's upset, trying to think of something to soothe them. And my kids are just old enough to have missed the kind of the iPad era, where it's very easy. I mean, I would have done it. I would have given them that thing that would keep them soothed while we were driving the 40-minute trip to where we were going in Hamilton, because it could be really challenging sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have an easy answer to that situation, but yeah, I guess that's a wider issue of how we've structured our whole society and the stress that parents are under. That's ultimately at the root of that.
I think the issue is, as parents, we do get into a state of desperation and we reach for the easy thing, and the easy thing is always the device. So it really does take some thought processes to think about, and this is like pre-thinking. So ahead of time, you're thinking, okay, if this is the situation that comes up, here's my strategies and here's what I'm going to do. So if my child is, you prepare yourself as a parent for the drive, right? So instead of that, this is the list of podcasts that we can listen to, or there's some snacks, you know, readily available for them, or I ask them to pack a bag of some books or toys or things that they want to engage with. It's possible, but it takes some pre-thinking and pre-planning in order to achieve these things. And that goes along, you know, with sleep as well. Like I said at the beginning of our conversation, sleep is not about, or getting a good night's rest is not about, oh, in 5 minutes I'm going to go to bed, I should maybe drink some hot milk and that will help me sleep for the next 8 hours. No, sleep is a 24/7 process.
Yeah.
So you have to be living a proper lifestyle in order to get a good night's rest on a regular basis.
So what would be the ideal day then? Because we've talked about various aspects of the day, but from this perspective, what's an ideal day to help you sleep at the end of the day?
So having healthy thoughts for sleep. So, looking at, like I said, at the end of the day, writing down how the day went. So just emptying your mind onto something, and also then preparing for the next day, like writing your checklist and things like that. Healthy eating. So your nutrition, having certain types of things that you're eating, or how well is your nutrition in regards to routinely eating throughout the day, and shutting down your nutrition early enough in the evening so your body's not still trying to digest while you're trying to go to sleep. That also includes the beverages that you are taking into your body. Like, for example, you should not be having caffeine past 12 noon in order to get a proper night's rest. There are exercising. You should be doing some proper exercising, physical movement throughout the day. Your relationships, having healthy relationships in your life will help you sleep better, because then you won't be ruminating over conversations that you had throughout the day. You know, that's not what's keeping you awake at night. And believing that you actually can get a good night's sleep. So, you know, telling yourself, I'm going to sleep well tonight, rather than always complaining about, I don't sleep well. I mean, the more you say that, phrase, the more you're telling your brain that you don't sleep well. And so then your brain starts to believe that.
Mm. And you said also about like even the start of the daylight, facing into the sun for 10 minutes, the rising, mm-hmm. the rising sun, because right back at the start of the interview, you said that that kicks off the melatonin production that happens during the day that we need for nighttime.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an all day process. And if you really want to have healthy sleep routines, it's just an intentional thing. Years ago when I realized how important this was, I adjusted my whole life and schedule so that I can sleep now from 9 to 5, a full 8 hours sleep, and get up and live a whole day.
You get up at 5.
I do.
Oh.
Yeah. Because I go to bed I'm in bed at 8:30 and I'm writing or reading or doing something to calm me down, or doing some body tension release movement strategies or breathing or whatever. I'm asleep by 9, and I usually wake up between 4:30 and 5, and I get up and start my day at 5.
Wow.
Yeah.
How bad was your sleep before you did all this?
Well, I was a mother of 6 children.
Oh, so you really didn't have any sleep for a few years then.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I did my best to sleep, but, you know, you stay up and wait for your teenagers to come home, and then you talk to them, and you eat with, you know, you late night snacks and,
yeah,
you know, all of that stuff. So, yeah, I've definitely been through my life of not having great sleep.
Mm.
But yeah, you get to a point when you recognize the importance of it. And as it turns out, the ironic thing is that that teenagers really can benefit greatly from this 9 p.m. to 5 a.m. schedule also.
Well, they need more sleep, don't they? Like when their brains are rebuilding. There's all sorts of stuff going on. I think they need a couple of extra hours of sleep than the rest of us.
They should probably have at least 10 hours of sleep. But the most productive hours of sleep for your body and for your circadian rhythm is from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Within that 2-hour time frame, where actually the body is producing a hormone, it's called the human growth hormone. It's HGH for short. And it's a huge immunity booster, and also really, really important to body development for adolescents.
I guess these times of sleep were settled into the human body before we had electricity. So the sun would be down in most parts of the world most of the time by 9 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
But it's different. It's different now. Can we kind of shift it a little bit? I feel like 9 to 5. Could become 10 to 6 quite easily.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be a big deal.
Yep. 10 o'clock is also good. I mean, 9 is ideal. 10 o'clock is fine. As long as you're getting those 2 hours of sleep before midnight, the HGH hormone will produce effectively. It's just recognizing and understanding what happens with sleep. If you're not getting proper amounts of sleep, you can, you know, that if your relationships aren't great, if you're struggling with weight management or your motivation to be productive at work or in school or whatever those things are, it's a whole lifestyle change in order to get productive sleep at night.
Yeah. And I guess one thing we've done is we've created this big list of things that you have to do. And some people will be going to like, oh, that's a bit overwhelming. I can't do that. And you were just talking about when you were a mother of 6, like there was, you know, it wasn't really an option. So is there like a one thing that you would recommend?
Well,
like if you could only do one thing, what would that be? Or would it depend on the situation?
Nutrition. I'd probably start with nutrition, because so we started talking this whole conversation started around serotonin. 90% of your serotonin is produced in your gut.
Mm.
So if your nutrition habits are not healthy, you're not producing serotonin, and therefore you're not in a state of calm and happiness, which means then your brain is ruminating. You have no motivation to exercise your body. you're just scrolling on social media for no reason whatsoever other than the addiction. So I would probably start with nutrition and go from there.
So what,
I've written a sleep course, which is
all right,
which is very can be very useful. In order to change any habit, you need to change your brain. So that would be a meditative process. And in sophrology, the main method we use is meditation.
Yeah, I must admit, I have found that meditation is useful for sleep. I know there's much more to meditation, but just in terms of relaxing, like I didn't do it last week at all before bed, and each night I woke up for about 2 hours, and last night I was like, okay, I have to do something so I can actually sleep through the night, and it worked.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I was like, I just don't feel like it. I want to watch this. I want to do this. And then it's like, oh, I really have to go to bed now. It's way too late.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's what happens. We get to the point where our body is saying it's time to sleep. And we're like, I don't feel like it. I'm going to watch TV. I'm going to eat something. I'm going to do this. And then you enliven the body when the body was like, okay, it's time to go to sleep. And you fight that with all of the things that you should not be doing. And so then your body's like, okay, I guess we'll wake up now. And so then you come alive again. And then your body is like 5 hours later saying, we should sleep now.
I think that there should be classes on in school on self-discipline training and self-motivation and understanding.
There should be.
understanding how that works. Because, of course, the school's discipline system is an external discipline system where you have to do it or you get in trouble or you'll get bad grades or your parents won't be happy or, you know, there's like a negative consequence. And, well, whether it's negative or positive consequence, the point is that it's all external.
Right.
Mostly external. I mean, some kids do get satisfaction from getting good grades, but it's still like an external judgment on you. So,
yes,
that's a challenge.
Our bodies are actually designed to take care of us and keep us healthy and alive. And it is our intentions and our brains and our actions and the things that we choose to do that, that keep us unwell. And so by using the internal tools that we have and going internal and recognizing breathing strategies and our 11 body systems and working in harmony with our brains and our bodies instead of fighting it off, we have all the tools that we need in order to keep us healthy and alive and calm and peaceful and happy. It's like you say, we just don't know how, you know, what the tools are and how to use them. So that's what a sophrologist is for, to help you become aware of those things.
I was just thinking about like the messaging I was getting as a child and a young person. It was all about don't be lazy. It's heroic to work hard. People weren't literally saying it's heroic to work hard, but that was the subtext of all the comments about laziness and hard work. Mm-hmm. And you get applause for working hard. And if you say, I'm tired and someone recognizes it's because you've been working hard, then that's the thing you like. That's the goal.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of like to boast or humble brag about that sort of thing, drop that into the conversation. Like everywhere you go as a young person, that's the message you're getting. You're not getting look after yourself at all.
Right.
At least I don't remember really getting that.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe there is to an extent, like, you know, don't do stupid stuff, don't drive dangerously, and don't drink and take huge risks. You got those messages, but not like day to day. You're talking about kind of, what is it, monitoring yourself, just like a self-awareness of where your body's at. I certainly didn't. It was easier to meet all the other goals adults set me if I actually turned off my awareness of where my body. Because I couldn't study if I was tired, I had to push through that so I could study. And if there were things I didn't want to do because they were like exceedingly boring or something like that, you have to turn off all those feelings of excitement about what you want to do so that you can do the boring thing. Like I just remember a lot of that, and maybe I learned those lessons too well. Yeah.
Well, as you say, it's all external, especially as in our adolescent years, as teenagers, we are constantly concerned about recognition and appreciation from outside external sources.
Well, yes, and you haven't even got onto members of your preferred gender and what they think about you.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So it's you're continually focused externally and not feeling and sensing what's going on internally. And yeah, that causes all kinds of problems. So yeah. when you become the most important person to yourself, then that's when you become motivated to take care of yourself. And external sources don't matter as much as internal sources do.
Yeah, I keep reminding myself about that thing when you go on an aeroplane and at the start of the plane they say, you know, if there's an emergency, this will drop down. And if you've got a child with you, put your own one on first, then your child's, because you can't look after your child if you're not looked after. I keep trying to remember that because the all the subconscious messaging I've got is sacrifice is good and noble and that sort of stuff, which is a dangerous thing for your health long term.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. There has to be a happy balance somewhere.
Yeah.
About taking care of yourself, and then, you know, because you can't give from a place of lack, so you can only give as much as you've got. And if you're giving more than what you've got, then eventually you're going to have body burnout, and you're not going to sleep well, and you're not going to eat well, and you're not going to do all of the things that are most important to take care of yourself. So, yeah.
Yeah. And folks, if you've just tuned in, and we actually were talking about sleep to start with, I guess part of the message I got from you is that we need to be aware of what's happening in our body. So we're not monitoring, we're just aware of where we're at and if things are having an effect on us.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, whether that
means... That's a great place to start.
A
place of awareness is a great place to start, because when you are aware, now you can then determine what should I do about it. You know, or do I need to do anything about it? Or maybe I just need to be curious and aware of it and just recognize what's going on with my body, with my mind, with my emotions, with my heart. As long as I'm aware, then I can tune in and make the best decisions.
You know, I was watching ages ago, I saw a bit of a podcast, and it was a tech guy. I think Mark Andreessen is like a tech funder or something like that. I think he was the guy who invented Netscape Navigator back when the internet was early and made a lot of money from that. And he was raving about the Fitbits or the watches that can measure your where you're at physically, like your physical, give you a physical readout. And eventually he said it'll be able to tell you, it'll let you know that you're too stressed or that you're doing too much of this and that you need to stop and things like that. And I was thinking, we actually already have those systems. Our body already does do that, but we've switched off our awareness of them, and now we're creating technology to do the thing that our body already does anyway. I just thought it was kind of interesting.
Exactly. Yeah. We've got their technology, all these technology hacks, right? That's what they're called, body hacks.
Yeah.
So now we have this thing that's telling us how well we slept last night, instead of just, you know, waking up and observing your own body, meditating for a minute. How did I sleep? How did I do? You know, instead we just pick up the phone and we look at the app and how did I sleep last night? Or, you know, what kind of fitness levels have I, you know, rather than just tuning in and listening to the body and determining, yeah, I've walked enough steps today. I feel pretty good about the movement and the activities I've done today. Or, you know, yeah, I'm feeling a little bit stressed. I think I'll, you know, sit down and rest for a minute or do some breathing. You know, we don't really, we choose to look at an app to determine what's going on with our bodies rather than, you know, using our own minds and our own emotions and our own physical sensations to listen to our body systems tell us what's actually going on.
Yeah, and I also thought if we'd spent a lifetime ignoring the internal signs of stress, that an external sign of indicator that we were stressed, we probably weren't going to pay that much attention to it ultimately anyway.
Yeah. You'll just be like, oh, yeah, that's a thing, and then move on.
Yeah, you'd be like, well...
I didn't sleep very well last night.
I have to do this thing, you know. Yeah, I just have to do this thing. I have to fulfill the obligation, and you've always kind of put yourself last compared to those obligations, so having a Fitbit tell you it's probably not going to change that.
You make yourself a priority, and by doing that, you now can show up for life and to all the people in your life.
Yeah.
And that's something that we just don't do. We do not make ourselves priorities because we think that's a selfish thing to do. So we're always giving, 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 at whatever level and not like, for example, you know, you taking some time off being live on the radio because you needed to get some other things done. Like, that's a very similar example of, you know, recognizing what's really most important and, you know, what you can actually achieve with things if you put that most important thing first. And for ourselves, we have to recognize that we are the most important thing in order to show up for life.
I just have to take care of yourself. I feel the need to leap in and explain that I'm not actually a very good role model for this. It took pretty much a year, certainly a last 6 months of like just grinding through the end of the year and not enjoying it. It took a long, long time for me to get the message, and my body head was shouting at me by the end of the year about that. So I'm really not, and I'm saying all these things with you like it's great advice, but I'm very bad at taking it. But you finally did it,
and that's the great part.
Yeah, well, I might have just completely crashed if I hadn't, I think.
Exactly. Yeah. And you became aware of that. If I don't do this thing, I'm not going to be good for anybody.
Yeah. Ultimately, I guess. And honestly, sometimes I think people have to crash once to see what it's like, and then they're like, okay, I want to avoid that again. I kind of feel like, because we've got so out of the habit of listening to our body signals, we have to find out what the consequence is, I think, in this modern world, unless we do some of what you're talking about. So, folks, we have been talking to Lani about sophrology and about sleep. And did you say you do a sleep course for people who are really struggling with it?
I did. I wrote a sleep course. It's a self-paced one. You can do it on my website, sophrosolus.com, and sophro is spelt with a PH, so SOPHRO, sophrosolus.com. You can go there. You can find a link for my sleep course. And actually, so I know the sting of paying US dollars for things. So I am offering it to people in New Zealand. If they send me an email and prove that they live here, I will give them access for $47 New Zealand.
Right. So we should be clear. You're based in Raglan, although you might be in Hamilton right now. And obviously you used to live in the US, but you have, you married a New Zealander and you're all here now. Everyone's confused about why we're talking about US dollars. I guess you've got family and you've got friends in the US still, so you've got connections there.
Most business, you know, I'm a global business, so yeah. I do sophrology and work with clients anywhere in the world, depending on what time of the day it is, because I use Zoom a lot with some of my clients.
Yeah.
So, you know, as far as my programs goes, yeah, they're on my website. Well, I at the moment just have one on my website because I don't want to confuse people with too many programs. Sometimes too much is too much.
Yeah.
At the moment there's a sleep program there, and yes, it is pay in US dollars. However, in New Zealand, if you live in New Zealand and you can, you know, show me your whatever that you live here, then yes. I'm happy to use a bank transfer rather than actually paying on my website.
Okay, so that's cool. Mm. Yeah, it's almost funny that we need courses on how to sleep, but that is where we're at as a culture at the moment.
Well,
I think
this one is a meditative strategy, so as we've been talking about, how do we retrain and rewire and get our bodies to do things differently from what we've been doing, you know, using awareness and intention. The only way to do that is through meditation and changing some habits. And it's very, very hard to change our habits as we age.
Yes, I've noticed that.
Yeah, so you have to be very intentional, and the best way to do that is through meditation.
Yeah.
And so this is a meditation course. So it's a six, there are six, six cor- or six modules. And with each module, there's a meditation to work through, and some reflective writing to do, and just working on changing your lifestyle so you can get better sleep.
Mm. All right, Lani. Well, look, thanks heaps for that conversation this morning and advice. Yeah. And nice to chat to you for the first time in a few months. And we'll be back again with you in about 4 weeks. I think that's the plan, isn't it?